From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
Summer has just officially arrived, and with it a whole new to-do list of tasks aimed at keeping the garden going in the best possible shape all season long. We're succession sowing vegetables, of course, as the spinach and early salads fade, and probably already pulled the pansies in favor of summer annuals in the pots, but there's always more to do in other parts of the garden too. On the list are some strategic summer pruning tasks and a likewise strategic plan for deadheading or otherwise reducing self-sowers, so there's not too much of a good thing, for instance. Plus, there are perennials in need of haircuts. My friend Ken Drews, author of 20 garden books and a longtime gardener in New Jersey, calls a lot of it not full-scale cleanup exactly, but editing, and that's our topic today with his help. Hi, Ken, are you ready to edit?
Oh, Margaret, you've made such wonderful promises. Can I go now?
Okay, bye. It's all done. Yay!
Oh, boy.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, I called June the month of the Shaggies, like it's a dance or something, the Shaggies, because it's like things spring went over the hill, right?
Spring? Well, I thought May was really long and slow, and June is like gone.
Yeah. Yeah, and things can look shaggy and need a haircut, but it's sort of like where to begin, because we already did the big cleanup and we know we have another one at the end of the season, but this is something different. Like you go say editing, it's like a fine tuning, right?
Yeah, it's the first or second fine tuning of the season. It doesn't really ever stop. But I know what you're saying. There's a lot of things that are happening right now that need our attention.
Well, for instance, if you have spring blooming perennials, which a lot of people do, especially both of us are Northeastern gardeners, and you know it's a popular time of the year with a lot of things that bloom earlier on, and bulbs, you have a lot of stuff that's faded, herbaceous stuff that's faded. So that's one layer of tidying or whatever. So maybe that's the most familiar and the most obvious. We start there. What are some of the things?
What do you mean by dated? What do you mean by dated?
Faded.
Oh.
Faded. Yeah.
Faded. Oh my
faded.
Goodness.
Yeah. Faded. Yeah. Oh, they're all faded.
Yeah. Like all the daffodil foliage and all that stuff.
Yeah. Exactly. Now mine in that case, for instance, I have big masses of narcissus and they are not fully withered yet on their own. So I would not clean those up. And usually for me that's around July 4th.
Well, it depends when they turn yellow.
Yeah. Yeah. And just on the average here, it's around the early July period. Yeah.
Well, there's some here that have already, I guess maybe they're the earliest ones or have yellowed, but there's one that I look at every single day and it's completely green and it looks just fine. But those are restoring the bulbs, you know, they're right. Making carbohydrates for that underground. We need to have that foliage green as possible.
Right. So cosmetics would be to intrude in the name of cosmetics would be a bad idea. Whereas, don't you have some perennials that, like I have euphorbias, for instance, early, the polychroma types and so forth, the most common of the, you know, kind of chartreuse, early spring euphorbias. Those are all stretched up and done. And, you know, with a nice haircut, they'll make like a mound again.
Oh, yeah. You know, lungwort, pulmonaria.
Right.
It blooms. And then the foliage gets kind of black at the tips and black spots. I don't know if you ever noticed that.
Absolutely. But
you can actually cut that way back to like 2 inches and it'll have a flush of gorgeous new growth.
Yeah. No, I the perennial geraniums for me, because I rely a lot on them. I use geranium macrorhizum, the big root geranium, as a ground cover that can take almost any situation, even dry shade, but sunny spots even I use it in. And that kind of stretches up at bloom time in May into early June. And then the choice is right now whether to sort of really haircut it, like with almost with a head shears down held down low, you know, to really cut it way down, which will remove the spent blooms as well as tighten up the foliage again. Or whether to just pick out the spent blooms, or whether to turn a blind eye.
Turn a blind eye, right. As you're saying that, I'm thinking, that's a really good idea. I should do that. But I don't. I really, that's one plant I let alone because it does so well on its own.
Well, and I have a couple of places where it's kind of near a narrower, you know, it's along the front of a bed near a narrower spot, not super narrow, but where when it's at its full, you know, stretched up late June height and width, it's kind of billowing out and up too much, and it makes the space feel dwarfed, you know, it's out of proportion. So I sometimes do it like right in the very front beds near the front path to make it less, feel less congested, and then it comes back nice and tight for the
ding,
rest.
Ding, ding, garden forensics. I think you know, you have more sun than I do, although you probably don't grow that in full sun, and I don't have any full sun, but I'm thinking all the stretching and everything, and I just realized mine are growing in a wall, rock wall.
Oh, that's funny.
So it doesn't elongate, really. It's kind of, I guess it's compact and dwarfed by not having a lot of soil and moisture. And it does fine. It's covered with flowers, but I can just enjoy it and forget it.
So I also grow geranium pheum, samovar.
It's funny how...
Why do you make that noise when I say one of my favorite plants?
I can't believe it's your one of your favorites. I got mine from Robin Perrer, at least 20 years ago. And it was samovar, the one with the really nice zone on the leaf.
Yeah, it's actually samovor, not samovar like the coffee machine.
Samovar.
Samovar.
Now I know. But first year I had the black zone. The next year I had probably 20 plants, almost all green. And I've been weeding that plant out ever since. It is a weed for me. And this year I'm going to just try to deadhead it and only take it out when it's in the way, but it's everywhere. And it's funny how that can be, how a plant can be your favorite and it can be a bane for me, although it's not the worst, but.
Right. And so for me, samovar with that chevron of dark purpley black on the foliage on that typical sort of
espresso. We're not talking about the machine, but the color.
Right. Right. Espresso. Good. So for me, they've stayed true. I get some variation in the seedling population, but not really. I've had them probably 25 or more years, and it stayed in the same area. I haven't had it spread around particularly far. And, you know, I love it because of that sort of purplish on the leaves. I love it with like, as a sort of mixed ground cover mixed in with some of the purple heucheras or whatever. Mm. But the thing is, when it blooms, it pushes those flowers way, way up above the mound of the variegated foliage. And like super high, like knee high, and then kind of the plant just sort of falls apart, and you have to cut the flower stalks at least down to get a nice flush, another mound of fresh foliage. So, you know, that's sort of one of those must jobs for me because it really looks horrible. I mean, that one, it's not an optional one.
Maybe by doing that, you're stopping what happened here, which is it just taking over.
Well, because I'm basically deadheading before any seeds. Right. Yes, but exactly.
It has flowers all along that spike that are maybe the size of a penny, sort of, but they're very pretty colored. I love the browns. It's kind of a eggplant color, sort of. And they're adorable. But then they make their little fruits, and then they spill their seeds, and then they choke out their neighbor.
Well, the common name for geranium pheum samovar is the mourning widow, mourning, like at a funeral, because she has those drooping little dark, 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 dark flowers, like she's in mourning and has her head bowed. So, So, I mean, speaking of plants like that we don't agree about, not that we don't agree about everything, dear. we both grow certain corydalis. And I think we have different opinions about those as well, which ones are thugs and which ones are more well-behaved. Again, in different situations, plants behave differently. Which corydalis do you grow? Because that's something else that if there's too much or whatever, I might be tidying it up around now.
Well, almost everybody grows corydalis lutea, the one with the yellow flowers, and it blooms for months. And it's a little aggressive. It self-sows around. And I didn't have it for years. And Lois Carswell from the Brooklyn Botanic Garden gave me a little plant. And now I have more than I would want. But I have one here that's called Corydalis acralucca. And it has ivory colored flowers, and it doesn't bounce around like Lutea.
So interesting that that's the case, because for me, the thug would be the one that's, and I don't know how you really pronounce it, Cailanthifolia.
Oh, that's, yeah, that's
a mess. That's a total thug for me. So, you know, it's the yellow one, Lutea, I have plenty, but I don't have very, it's not extreme. You know, I always have plants, but there's not tons of them. So it's just funny.
And you can grab it with your hand, just pull it
absolutely
out.
Absolutely. Easy, 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 easy. Yeah. And we both, I know we both have a lot of columbine. I have so much now, and it's not like I ever planted it that I can remember.
I went through the garden this year and just reduced it by 90% because I still have too much. And a couple of ones that were beautiful or double or pink or special. One, I found one that has gold foliage that just appeared. Oh. And there's one that I got from Wave Hill from seed. I think it's called something like Irish Elegance or something. And it has white double flowers. And it's been in the same place now for its third year because they're really short-lived. They usually don't last more than 2 years. But I have cleaned up so much of that. I probably have a pound of seed if I let the seed happen.
Right.
But that's gotten, you know, you think, oh, it's so nice. And then it's out of control.
Right. So that's something where, even though it seems extreme, I am pulling out some plants, the whole plant before they set seed.
Right.
I'm deadheading some that I really like the color.
Right.
And I hope it'll continue, you know, for another year or whatever in that color, in that spot or whatever. And you know what I mean? So I'm doing multiple tactics. I'm using multiple tactics on the same species of plant.
Well, thinking about things that I can grow and you can't, and you can grow and I can't grow Verbena bonariensis.
Right, right.
And I know it's a hardy annual, I guess. And it's beautiful. You've done, I don't know if you're still doing it, but that was gorgeous by the
plant. Yeah. Each year, and that's with a lot of these self-sowing things that are in a slightly warmer climate, they'd probably be, I don't know what they'd be. So I always have some patches of it and it migrates slightly, you know, unless I am careful to, you know, edit, like what we're talking about, edit and keep it in for my Oma Angelica, same thing, Angelica Gigas, the same thing. It's tempting sometimes when you see all this bounty of a plant you love, like Verbena bonariensis or like Angelica Gigas, to think, oh, wow, I've got so many, this is so great. But we need to edit because we need to think about the outlines of next year's garden as well. Like, you know, if we just let it get bigger and bigger, same like with the columbines, we could end up with columbines like in every crack and crevice and bed and border, right?
Right. And I really like verbascum, the mullins, not like the roadside one. Ones that are like candelabra and they have lots of yellow flowers and they bloom for months. And like Angelica, what I'm saying is it pops up in the pail.
Yes.
So either you have to kill it or attempt to move it. And if you get it right away when it's first appearing, you can move it, but it's a little bit, it's not up to its most vigorous self because it has a long tap root. But I imagine that's similar with Angelica. Have you ever moved plants and saved them?
Yes.
Of Angelica?
Yes. And I've given them to people also, but I do them when they're very young. I don't wait until it's really established. I think that would be very, very hard to, I don't think it would work to dig it out.
That's a biennial and verbascum is a biennial.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then there's hardy animals like the poppies. We can talk about them in a second, but I'm wondering, do you think the Angelica sprouts the same year that it blooms? And then carries a little rosette over winter, or do you think it has to wait till next spring?
The Angelica Gigas, it does not bloom on a first year plant, no.
Right, but do the seeds, if you sow the seeds or if they self-sow, do they germinate this year, same year, or do they have to go through a winter?
I feel like, I can't answer that. I know I always have tiny little plants and I always have really big plants that are in their second year. You know what I mean?
I know just what you mean.
Yeah.
And sorry to ask you such a hard question. Really.
Yeah. Sorry. I'm trying to imagine I'd have to actually sort of test that. But Nicotiana, that's the other thing that I have a lot of. And
you said you had a mat of them.
Well, that's the thing, is that that's something that, as you know, I mean, you know better than I do, because you propagate, you grow a lot of things from seed. It's like dust, the seed of Nicotiana, mm-hmm. right? And so if you have a bunch of those in a bed for sort of your summer, you know, once I have a lot of them in between where we were talking about those geraniums, like the geranium feum, which is never going to be as full after its haircut as it was earlier in the season, in the spring pre-bloom and at bloom time. So I have things like Nicotiana that self-sow in among those and give me like this second act, you know, in summer and fall. Well, that's fine, except like you said, like sometimes you get the dust every single one takes, you know, the dust like seed, every single one grows.
Right.
And I do, I have like mats. Now, what do you do when you have a really successful self-sower and you don't want to get rid of it and you want to edit it? What do you do about that?
Oh, gosh. Someday in my lifetime, I will throw away a plant. But not, I haven't done it yet, really.
Okay.
I can hardly think of it. So I'll move them. Some will make it, some won't make it. And there's no room for any of them. It's just like, you know, I've been working with primrose, with my candelabra primrose.
Yes.
And I, because we had that thing, we tried them over winter and it was so successful. But what am I going to do with 1,000 primroses?
Right, right.
So,
well, right, right.
Like, and answer the question, I planted them and that's crazy.
Right.
So I grew them from seed and I pricked the seed, the little seedlings out. And they had to go through a winter first before they would germinate. Then I planted them on the bank of the canal. And it's crazy. Anyway, it's crazy.
Yeah. So, well, we should move on to some woody things too. But before we do, I was going to say, you just are reminding me, you know, you said something like, who needs a million primulas or whatever. Hellebores. I have a couple of big beds of hellebores of the Orientalis or X hybridus types that bloom in late winter and early spring. And those are prodigious self-sowers. And so next to the mama plant, there's going to be lots and lots and lots.
Under her leaves. And I remember when we paid $35 a plant.
Yeah.
And we were so excited. It's probably 20 years ago, maybe more. And then I even went through a whole thing where I stratified the seed. It went through a winter, went through a second winter, warm, cold, wet, dry, the whole thing. And then I lifted a leaf a few years later. And they're as thick as lawn underneath there.
Right. So they sow themselves very like a mother hen with, you know, a lot of chicks underneath her skirt, so to speak. And so what I'm doing now at this time in my garden career, I don't want any more hellebores. You know, I've got plenty.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
especially
so when
they're just white or pink and
right
less
when
special.
When I do cleanup and when I'm weeding and when I'm just around in the garden at any time where they are, from spring cleanup on through the whole year, if I see a bunch, I just pull the whole thing out and discard it. So some friends have asked for some and I've said, hey, just bring an empty flat we'll have some potting soil and you can stick those little babies in a flat, like what you're saying, pricking off one.
I just take a shovel and the whole, they get the whole thing.
Right.
With the plants.
Right. So what about like, I mean, there are things, woody things too, that need tension now, don't you think? I mean, for instance, spring blooming, the lilacs, they'll start to, in July-ish where we live, they'll start to the process of making the buds for next year that they're going to carry over the winter. So like either you prune them from bloom to, just after bloom to like July, or you run the risk of diminishing the flowers for next year. At least that's the theory. So
some of them make fruits. Some of the flower heads stay green, and then you probably can see them if you look and have lilacs. Little green fruits on them just turn brown and are unsightly. So in any event, those should go. And that's
well, I do that right after they finish blooming, when the blooms fade.
Right.
But I'm just saying, for people may not have gotten to it all, and it's sort of like this is the last bit of that window without potentially removing flower buds for next year, which will happen later in the summer. So are you doing any other pruning, any other woody stuff now?
Well, some things, if you prune them a little late, they'll push new growth that'll get fried. You know, comes out and then it gets burnt by the sun. So I try to get all that done. I don't have any of the Viburnum dilatatum anymore, which is a very popular plant because it has red berries. And we like the red berries, and so do the birds. And then that plant, which is kind of invasive and certainly an exotic, gets around. So I'm growing a couple of native and local viburnum. And I know that some people think I'm a native Nazi, but it's that I don't want to contribute to bad things.
Right.
And then again,
I'm talking about the double file viburnum, which has become invasive in many regions of the country.
Right. Yes. And then you and I talk about Hesperus every year. People call it phlox, of course.
The Dame's Rocket, but the herbaceous plant now we're talking about. Yes.
Right. It's a hardy annual, I guess. Maybe it's biennial. Short-lived perennial. And that's everywhere. Covers the roadsides because this used to be farmland and it's a European farm weed.
Yeah.
But when I see it and it's bringing color to a little spot and it smells so good, especially at night, I leave it until it stops flowering and then I pull the whole plant out.
Right.
Which I know is dangerous.
Right, because it could sow some seed. So just so we don't run out of time, I just want to kind of go through the woody stuff, because I know that there are, for instance, in my apples, my crab apples, even my old magnolia, which it happens in some of the spots, you know, I get those water sprouts and things that are grafted, like my old crab apples down at the base, I get those, you know, suckers. You know, I think that's the other thing, is we have to go look for certain things, like, again, fruit trees and so forth. They're going to do that. And it's a good time to take all those off, I think, if you can get in there. My espaliered Asian pear on the back of the house.
Oh, yeah, that's
you know, amazing. And don't you have some topiaries or hedges or whatever that keep pushing out more and more and more, like my espalier does?
Not like your espalier, but I do have magnolias and they do exactly that.
Yeah.
And I have a little topiary schnauzer that is a taxus, a U.
Oh.
Y-E-W. And really, I should prune that every 2 weeks. It's a nice thing to know about taxus. It has unlimited buds, dormant buds, and some things don't, but you have to keep up with it. And I have a pruned beech tree that I have to keep after because it has a shape that I like. And if I don't keep after it, it makes these kind of whips out that go into outer space. And I was noticing with the climbing rose that it makes new canes and flowers at the same time, which is kind of unusual. But I have to train those new canes to go where I want them to be.
Right.
So I don't cut off.
Right. So one of the other things is that sometimes you get like these, especially in a beautiful variegated thing, you get one green sprout, like a reversion.
Right.
And those should come out whenever they, and whenever they occur. But can you tell us, like, give us like the 2-minute version of your wisteria, how to get wisteria to bloom thing, because that's always a good reminder. You're harsh with it, aren't you?
Well, one could say that.
Yeah.
And it works.
Because people
ask me all the time, how can I get my wisteria to bloom? So I prune the wisteria about every 2 weeks. It sends out these long, wiry stems, new growth. I prune them back to about 1 or 2 nodes that are facing in the direction I want it to grow. And I do that every 2 weeks until the beginning of August.
Wow.
And then I stop. And it's in a place where I just pass by it. It's really perfect. And they bloom. So I consider it the secret to success.
Right.
Like harsh treatment.
Right. Right. Yeah. And I'm just trying to think of any other things, if I have any other things that I'm still.
You made me think of so many things that.
Well, one real
poppies and
yeah, one woody. Let's just put in a word for that. I mean, one real quick one is I love the wood poppy. It's an Eastern native. It's not native up in New England where I am, but that I grow it as an ornamental. It's Styloforum diphyllum, the wood poppy or celandine poppy.
Or celandine poppy, right.
Yeah. And the thing about that is it makes so many seedlings that what we were talking about before with some of the other overly enthusiastic creatures. That's actually my really big task this week. That's what I'll be doing in the garden this week, is I'll pull out half the plants probably And with the others, I'll pull off a lot of the very beautiful fuzzy seed heads before they ripen fully and explode.
And explode, right.
So that's a combination where I'm not just, quote, deadheading. And some of the plants, they yellow around now. And I don't know why one does it and another doesn't. It must be the age of the plant. But some of them I cut to the ground, so there's just the rosette left, you know. So it's kind of a mixed approach. But at any rate, that's another one. If people are growing it, it's a wonderful plant, but you've got to have a firm hand with it. So, of course, we've run out of time again. when are you going to be up here to help me?
After my second surgery. No.
Okay. Okay. All right. Well, good. So I will talk to you soon. And thank you for making time today.
Oh, and thanks for all the good wishes with the puppies and everything.
Yes. I'll talk to you soon.
Good. Bye.
And I'll talk to all the rest of you soon again, too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Stitcher or Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or on Facebook and on Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy cleanup and gardening meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.